Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. We're not going to be silenced. I think I explained that yesterday pretty well, and I'm going to tell you again today. We're not going to be silenced, whether it be by censorship, shadow banning, banning, whatever it might be. We're not going to be silenced. I want to thank you so very much for joining me today. Thank you so much for your belief and trust in this platform and, of course, your support of this platform. Without your support, we could not do what we do, and we appreciate that, bringing you stellar guests every week, whether it's people like, Stan Dale later today, Steve Quayle, Richard Proctor, the constitutional expert, and others, so many to name. You know, there's a couple of very interesting headlines, of course. President Trump says that the federal government might have to step in to stop this liberal lunacy lockdown crap that is anti-constitutional. It's amazing. I mentioned a restaurant in Cory, Pennsylvania yesterday. This is in my backyard, and they opened. Levine, you know, against the orders. And, they closed. Did you hear, Eric the Tech, did you hear that?
I did not.
You know why they closed?
Why?
This is sad. And the reason they closed was because the owner said, look, we have to close because my employees are receiving death threats. I want to protect my employees. Now, for anybody out there listening and watching this, I want to tell you something. That's how the other side plays. That's how the fascist, unconstitutional bastards out there play right now. And that's how they're playing. And I get emails all of the time, and I see comments in the YouTube section all of the time. Oh, we've got to just settle down and play nice and sit down, just pray. Yes, pray. Absolutely pray. Absolutely. But remember Nehemiah, you know, he's building the wall and he had a trowel in one hand and a sword in the other. You know, look, we can do two things at once, right? We can. We can pray and give him what for at the same time. That's right. So that's the story. So that, you know, I would look. That's a sad situation. I mean, to me, you got to close the restaurant because the employees are getting death threats. All right. I would not take too kindly to that. I'm telling you right now, you've got a bunch of sheep. I don't know whether you saw this as well in Brooklyn. This park in Brooklyn, they actually painted circles on the grass that were 6 feet apart to enforce social distancing. Now, it blew my mind. The fact that they painted the circles on the grass, okay, yeah, that was interesting. That kind of, yeah. But what blew my mind is people were going to the circles and, I gotta go here. Gotta go to the circle. What's wrong with you people?
Is that why you painted a circle by my desk?
No, that's for another reason. Did you see the debt cord there too? Never mind. Yeah. I'm serious. Look, folks.
I want to say you don't want to be sending death threats to Cory, Pennsylvania.
I know.
That is a well-armed community.
Right. But they did. Here's what I think we should do. Let's arm up and let's protect the employees. And hey, you want to threaten them with death? You lunatic libtards out there. Communist loving pinko people. Let's rock. Again, I'm fired up for the second day in a row. Actually, I've been fired up for a long time. I'm just letting it out now. And, but by the way, I saw a comment in the YouTube section. Oh, geez. Let John Moore speak. Doug, you're too clunky of a speaker. You know what? You're right. I am. I've got these odd pauses, these stuttering utterances. I do. But I've got a solution for you. Tune out. Don't listen. Don't watch. Just saying. Do we have them? All right. Now, folks, I've got a special treat for you right now. One of my favorite people on the planet is with me, is with us, all of us right now. And he's a guy that I have so much respect for. I was able to meet him in person, talk with him at length. I remember the first time we met, it was in Chicago. And, I'm going to tell you, he's got a great heart. He's got a fantastic mind. He can open a can of a whoop butt better than anyone I know. And he's walked the walk. He's not just talked the talk, but walked the walk. He's done more things than, most of us will ever do. He's a hero, a genuine hero. And he is the man behind a film titled Contraland. And ladies and gentlemen, if you've not seen Contraland, if you've not seen this video, I ask, I beg, I plead, I beseech you to watch it. Not just watch it. Well, definitely watch it, but also spread it. Send it to every person you know. Here's my goal right now. In the next, 72 hours, I would like, because of this broadcast right now, I would like 100,000 new people to see Contraland. Now, considering the fact we've got 165,000 subscribers just on YouTube alone, that shouldn't be a problem. All you have to do is go to the link in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com and watch it, share it, send it to everyone you know, put it on Twitter. And then when you're done putting it on Twitter, put it on Facebook. And then when you're done there, put it on Twitter again. And then when you're done there, put it on Facebook and Twitter and Facebook and Twitter. And send it to everyone you know. There are people out there that don't want this video to be seen. There are people out there who are sadly, and I mean this, sadly misrepresenting the work of Craig Sawyer. They're sadly misrepresenting the work of the people who are actually doing the work, instead making up these fantastical stories of rescues that don't exist, except in the minds of the people who believe in fantasy, that believe they're living a LARP, when in fact this is reality. Contraland is reality. Craig Sawyer, boots on the ground. That's reality. Working with law enforcement to bring down these pedophiles. That's reality. And you may say, well, okay, enough. You don't need to introduce them anymore. Yes, because there is so much junk out there. Some of it is, I'm not even going to say well-intentioned. It's just based in ignorance. And it's almost forgivable. But there's another part of it. It's based on deliberate lies in order to contaminate the truth. And the truth in this case is shown in Contraland. 100,000 in 72 hours. That's my goal. Please help us do that with that. Craig Sawyer, Vets for Child Rescue, Veterans for Child Rescue, Vets for Child Rescue, and ContralandMovie.com. How are you, sir?
I couldn't be better, Doug, after such a heartwarming introduction. I do appreciate it, sir. I want to speak real quickly about moral courage, and I believe that's what you just demonstrated yet again. If more people had that, there would be no child trafficking. The children would be safe. This would be a much safer world for kids. And I appreciate your alliance and your support. And I appreciate your voice for the truth. And it's an honor to be on with you yet again today, sir.
Well, it really is. I'll tell you what, Craig, you've demonstrated that moral courage. You've demonstrated putting everything on the line. I mean, the stuff you've gone through in the last several years, the stuff that I know about that you've gone through, not only in the professional life, but in your personal life, a man of lesser, belief in God and stature would just crumble. You've been such a target for, really people who just hate the truth, and you've been a target for people who have wanted to destroy the truth and to hide the truth. And I just want to say thank you, because, and again, folks, you just have no idea the crap that Craig Sawyer has gone through. Not just him, but his family and his team. So we owe him a debt of gratitude. I mean, we owe him a lot. And for that, again, thank you. So I look, and people complain, well, you know, 10 minutes, lauding each other and, you know, stroking each other, it's enough. But in this case, I think it's warranted, because you've gone through just incredible stuff. So I wish people knew, the extent that you've suffered and fought and actually prevailed in many cases. But anyway, let's talk about Contraland. It's out.
Yeah, man. I couldn't be more proud of how it's resonating with people that watch it, and the reviews from law enforcement, from Christians everywhere, from just regular families, and from a lot of these surviving victims of it. And it's really impactful. There's a lot of tears. People are saying, hey, it's some ways it's painful to watch, but we need to know. And thank you, Craig, for putting it out. And man, I did it from the beginning as a genuine public service alert to compromise the covert operation of child trafficking here domestically in our United States. So if you realize that it's a $38 to $50 billion a year criminal enterprise, and it's the fastest growing criminal industry on the planet, then you realize the scale of this and how pervasive it actually is, and that none of our children are safe from being stalked and hunted through their smart devices and many other ways by this big criminal enterprise. So I set out to expose it for anybody that's worked in the intelligence community or in special operations or even in law enforcement. You understand the value of secrecy and operational security. And what I set out to do with Contraland is compromise the operation of our enemy, to expose it so that it's no longer benefiting from the veil of secrecy that's allowed it to thrive so far. So if you love people, you want them empowered, and Contraland is an empowerment piece alerting the American people. And I've gotten contact from all around the world. People say, thank you. This needs to be out there. And so to really alert people and say, look, here's the nature of the threat. Here's how they're coming after our children. Here's how big it actually is and how secretive it actually is. Why aren't we being informed and empowered against this on the mainstream news media every single night? This is one of the biggest threats, not only to our children, but to the future of our nation in its entirety. They're shattering the lives of millions of children, and our political elected officials, many of them are compromised due to blackmail surrounding pedophilia and child trafficking operations. And so the American people are not aware of it, and that's the reason why I chose the vehicle, the platform, the tool, if you will, of a documentary to be that alert piece. There's nothing more powerful that I could do than to rip the lid off of this criminal enterprise and empower the people against it. Because with 320 million Americans understanding the nature of this threat, we can hound our elected officials, remove the ones that won't enforce the law, and demand that the ones that serve us empower the children and in place stronger legislation and stronger enforcement of existing legislation to safeguard the children. That's what it's all about.
Amen. And you, I'll tell you what, mission accomplished on that, in that respect, in my view anyway. And if, and here's the thing, if people must watch it and must share it. That's because without that, we're not going to have that level of understanding that needs to be out there, or that level of visibility. You really rip the veil, on many issues. And I'm not going to put any spoilers in here. Folks, watch Contraland. The link is going to be in the program description box. ContralandMovie.com is the website. If you know, again, I don't want to cover old ground, but I do want to just briefly, if you don't mind, recap, how this came about. Because, I mean, the movie Contraland, you had some, I mean, you had a fight to get this out, and you had a fight every step of the way. And again, lesser men would just toss it and say, heck with this. But man, you really went forward with it. So if you don't mind kind of just recapping how this came about.
Yes, sir. Well, a friend of mine from the CIA that grew up in the area just north of Houston, where I did, let me know. It was probably been about 6 years ago now. He said, Craig, this area is the hotbed, the really the epicenter for child sex trafficking in the continental United States. And I just couldn't wrap my mind around that, because the culture is so counter to that there. And it really upset me. And when I started talking to the investigators working on some of the biggest trafficking cases, were letting me know that, Craig, once you get past all the political corruption and all the financial crime benefit and the sexual perversion, you get all the way down to the core of child sex trafficking, which is the front line between good and evil. It actually is a spiritual clash. It really is the epicenter. It's the point at which good and evil collide, and they're fighting over the most precious and the most innocent, which is the children. And they said, no matter what you've seen in your life, this will turn your stomach, and it's sickening because it's just bad. It's all bad. And there are people that believe that doing the unthinkable to the most precious and innocent children somehow benefits them from the dark side. We're talking about people that have dedicated their life to evil. And a lot of them are elite, wealthy, but not all. And so we've got MS-13 and the Mexican drug cartels now trafficking children instead of dope in a lot of cases, because the children are more lucrative. Let's say a kilo of cocaine you can sell, it's consumed once, and that's it. But a child, sickeningly enough, can be sold repeatedly until they're dead, or until they age out to where perverts are no longer interested in them because they're no longer a child. So it's evil, it's sick, it's all bad. And so I got my heart broken, and after a lot of pain and trying to rack my mind on what could I do about it, I started getting angry because I saw the secrecy, and I saw that the American people did not know, and I saw that the child traffickers enjoy the level of top cover that is absolutely inappropriate and inexplicable, other than massive, massive corruption at the top of big Hollywood, at the top of our mainstream news media, at the top of our academia, at the top of Washington, D.C., and our political officials. Massive corruption gives this covert crime spree tremendous top cover, and that has to be removed. We have to rip that veil away so that we can safeguard the children. And a lot of people, so I decided that Contraland was going to be needed. And not to drag through the long version of it, but all of the crowdfunding platforms out of Silicon Valley undermined us and did things that are, in my opinion, criminal. They're illegal. They could not account for why they did it, but they refused to let us rally funds to create this film. That's the factual reality. We've got the forensic evidence to demonstrate that every single one of them undermined us. So at one point I realized I was going to have to found a nonprofit organization just to rally the funds, just to make the film, just to alert the populace. So a long way around the horn, I had to do it, put up with all the bureaucratic hassles of a 501c3 nationally a registered nonprofit organization and a mountain of bureaucratic paperwork. And we've gone through it all. And then in so doing, then there were financial predators that wanted to infiltrate the organization and create their own empire and benefit from it and destroy it and destroy my credibility so that they could take it over and benefit from it in their sick minds. And then we had the trolls where people, from different LARPer communities online saying, well, Craig works for Hillary. Well, I've never worked for Hillary. That's a lie. That's completely false. Hillary and John McCain visited my area of Iraq once when I was the agent in charge for the Department of State in Kirkuk, Iraq. So I was in charge of dozens of guys and several motorcades of vehicles to move Department of State personnel around that region of Iraq. I was the agent in charge for the regional coordinator for the Department of State. So any visitors fell under our veil of protection while they were there, whether it was for an hour or for a week. And so Hillary, as a junior senator in early 2005, made one visit to that region and with John McCain. So just based on that, these LARPers who claim to be Q followers and other people, mostly on Twitter and YouTube, he works for Hillary. So due to that, I hear about it every single day. People are saying, you're evil. I was going to support you in defending kids, but because you work for Hillary, you're evil, and I can't support your mission. I'm thinking, folks, just watch Contraland. Just watch it, and you'll understand. You cannot sit down and watch that without understanding the spirit in which that good faith public alert was brought to the people. It stands for itself. My life stands for itself. Yep. The facts stand for themselves. You don't see the crazy kind of stuff on LinkedIn. You see the crazy stuff on Twitter where the people that are either jobless or uneducated or, are just trying to undermine each other for drama and clicks. That's where most of the craziness goes. And it's been disappointing to see that some public figures with significant followers, talk about a couple hundred thousand followers each, have been discouraging their followers from supporting me and Vets for Child Rescue and Contraland due to these falsehoods that, quite frankly, they have no excuse for believing. Wow. Anyone with any education or professional background can see through this childish rumor mill. And that's been really disappointing, Doug. So, you know, on LinkedIn, you got seasoned professionals and they're like, hey, GoSaw Man, this is fantastic. Law enforcement allies, GoSaw Man, intelligence community officials and federal law enforcement and counterterrorism community, GoSaw Man, this is a good effort. But the crazies on Twitter, he's a space alien. He works for Hillary and just crazy things. He's a CIA mind control wizard. Just unforgivably silly accusations that with no foundation. And I guess that's just disappointing. But, you know, the good news is Contraland is out.
That's right.
And it speaks for itself.
And it does, and I didn't mean to over talk you or interrupt you, but people will say, well, how many children did Craig Sawyer actually rescue? Contraland, just watch that. And you know, it's obvious to me that detractors, the people who have issues, they're out to lunch, haven't seen Contraland. And once you watch it, you know, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. The mission statement's right on our website. And the mission is to, number one, expose child trafficking. Number two is directly combat the threat. That's our mission statement. Expose it, directly combat the threat. So the people that are like, how many children has he rescued? Well, it's not legal to go and grab a child and remove them from any situation unless you're their parent and have that power of attorney. That's kidnapping. So we're doing what we can as a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We're working with federal and local law enforcement to directly interdict and arrest the predators. And we've got 22 arrests with 100% conviction rate. And we're happy to rescue any children, but you can't rescue more children than you can by alerting the entire massive covert operation and compromising it so that it can't survive under the light of day. Now that you got 320 million people aware of the threat against their kids, now they can all hound their elected officials for stronger legislation. Now they can all be on the lookout and safeguard their children from their Xboxes and their apps on their phones. And watch over them accordingly and create a safer place. That's the biggest nuclear weapon you can bring against a covert operation, is to expose it and compromise it so that it's 1,000 times more difficult for them. So again, the people that want to know, well, how many individual rescues, well, they haven't read or understand the mission statement.
Exactly.
The mission statement is to expose and combat.
Right. And you've done a stellar job, I believe, in going after those who are involved in this heinous act. And, so, I mean, I'm very excited. I'm very, after watching Contraland, as a matter of fact, I had a couple of other people watch it with me. That was the first time when you first sent me the link. And then I had, I watched it again and I got a lot out of it, and I understood, or I understand now, I think, a lot better in terms of your operational, I don't want to say tactics, but the need, how you do things. I mean, you've got, when you talk about rescuing children from being trafficked, you've got to, I mean, this isn't a game. You've got to do things step by step, and you've got to work with people who are involved in law enforcement, and you've got to, you can't afford to screw up. I mean, again, this isn't a game. This isn't some LARP. This isn't some BS going on. It's real. So I really appreciate
that. Yes, sir. That's where my long history from the tier one level of the counterterrorist community comes in. That's where my work inside the intelligence community comes in. That's where my work as a federal criminal investigator comes in, and my work inside the diplomatic community comes in. So the credibility and the professionalism, when I approach law enforcement, they're able to know and understand that as a former federal criminal investigator, I understand their law enforcement use of force continuum, which is different than military rules of engagement, and allows them to understand I'm not Rambo. I'm not going to come in with a belt fed machine gun and just start gunning everybody down indiscriminately. No, I'm a careful law enforcement professional, and we work directly with the district attorneys where we go. And some of the operations involve up to 9 agencies, and federal and local. And so we have very careful planning, as you're seeing on screen here. We first kind of have the general planning, and then we have an actual briefing with everybody in the room, usually at the police stations, before we run the operation, so that everybody is very carefully briefed on the plan, and all the entities know their part and how it all works together. So that's the way that we're able to get these operations done, with the cooperation and approval of the local district attorney, so that they benefit from it, and the joint operation is celebrated and shared widely, because it's a great thing. You know, NGOs can do things that law enforcement cannot, and law enforcement can do things that NGOs cannot, and together we make an unbeatable combination. And so just exploring that and seeing what can be done for the children together has been inspiring, and it's been gratifying to see that we don't have to just sit back and agonize over the crime spree preying on our children. We can all unite and do something about it, and that's what we've done, and I'm grateful for it.
You know, after watching that, after watching Contraland, and folks, contralandmovie.com, and to support Craig and his efforts, I would consider it a personal favor if you did, because this is near and dear to my heart. Vets for the vets, the number four childrescue.org, vetsforchildrescue.org. Again, the links will be in the program description box at HagmanReportLive.com. But I was reminded of a situation. This is back in 1996 in upstate New York. I was working a case, and I stumbled upon, and that's the right word, I suppose, a situation of child. There was a guy who was a child predator. And to make a long story short, a long and painful story short, I had turned over some information to law enforcement, and they had worked the case. There were some acrimony and some acrimonious issues between the law enforcement entity and the district attorney. Anyway, what happened was this predator ended up getting off. No charges were filed. The charges had to be withdrawn because of some bad things that happened. But what I noticed in Contraland, the reason I mentioned that, and by the way, it was 2 years later. It was in 1998 when he was actually arrested on different charges by the feds, and he's still in jail as we speak. But having said all of that, when I was watching Contraland, I noticed that you take a lot of safeguards to make sure that when you focus in on a subject of an investigation, you do everything right. You do everything by the book. And by the book does not mean, you know, dragging your feet. It just means doing things right. And you get the people you're going after. And you're successful in terms of your conviction rate, which you just said is 100%. So that's so important. And I congratulate you for that.
Well, thank you. You know, we mean to be careful and accurate. And I think that's what brings about the best results. A lot of people ask me, how do you restrain yourself, Craig, when you see these people coming for children and coming for your daughter and all of these things? How do you not go off? And I tell them, well, it's better to have a careful victory, legal victory, so that these people can be exposed, they can be put away, and the populace can be alerted to it, rather than me satisfying some sort of personal, situation and going off, quote unquote, as people are suggesting. If I did something like that, I would be all done.
Right.
There'd be no operations for me in the future. And I have a big long-term strategy in mind, and I mean for this to result ultimately in a cultural about-face for the United States and for the American people, to create a non-permissive environment for child trafficking. And anybody, again, in the covert realm, they understand what a non-permissive environment is. That would be like you, Doug, being parachuted into a hostile nation that hates Americans, and you got a big American flag on your chest and a rifle, and they know that you're there to assassinate their leader, and they're all hunting you. That's a non-permissive environment, right? Well, that's what I want to create for child traffickers here in the United States, a non-permissive, hostile environment, so that it is almost impossible for them to do what they're doing to our children here ever again.
You know, I was surprised by the numbers. I was surprised by the people. And I say surprised because even when you hear it, I don't know. It's so pervasive. It's sickening. So I'm glad your long-term strategy allows for, or is going to set the stage for, hey, you know what? These people who have the propensity to do what they're doing, yeah, they're going to think twice, maybe three times, or just not do it at all. Or if they do it, they're risking the wrath of Craig Sawyer and the law, neutralize them in the proper fashion. So I like that. I want to get to this. What can people do? Contraland is out, period. That's a statement. Contraland is now out. First of all, folks, watch it. But what should people do? I mean, what can we urge people to do now that it's out? Because this was like a painful birth of a movie. When I say painful, I mean it was, man, you went through a lot to get this out. So what can people do? What should people do? Tell us what we need to do.
Yes, sir. Thank you. One of the things people can do is help get it past all of these bitter gatekeepers. This is a nonpartisan issue, and people are dragging every manner of baggage onto this, and they refuse to watch it for 1,000 excuses. And there should be nothing more uniting than rallying around the precious children. There's nothing else behind this other than my heart and my will to create a safer world for children. That's all I'm up to. And so people can help us by circumventing the gatekeepers. Email it to your entire contact list. This is something you can feel confident about. Watch it and see what it's all about, and then have the confidence to share it with everybody you know. Yes, share it with the President of the United States. Yes, share it with all his right-hand men. Yes, share it with CEOs and executives and admirals and generals and media personalities. Share it with everybody. Because right now, this thing should be going viral, but it's having a little bit of a sluggish start so far because of all this baggage and people's oppressing it and discouraging their followers from watching it on, sadly, erroneous rumors. And it speaks for itself. So I would say do that. Help get it past it. And then a second thing they can do, we are a humble 501c3 nonprofit organization. We've done every single thing that we've done with the donations, solely with the donations of our supporters who just donate to our org. It's tax-free. And so they can donate to our org, and they can buy merch and wear the merchandise and show support for the mission and for the children. That's something that can start conversation and the other methods and avenues of assistance. And hound your elected officials, folks. We've got on our website, vetsforchildrescue.org, a take action section. It's on our main landing page, and it's got a drop-down menu that shows you who your elected officials are if you don't already know. And there's a form letter if you're not a good writer, and you can fill in the blanks and send it to your elected officials demanding stronger enforcement for the children, stronger enforcement against child traffickers and against the abuse, and more protective of the children. So that doesn't cost you anything. And there you see the find your local officials, download the sample letter. Please do that, folks. That's in my heart. When I conceived Contraland, I meant for people not just to be entertained and heartbroken and empowered by it, but to take action once they've seen it. So there it is. Find your officials, download the sample letter, send it to them, ensure that our culture changes and becomes more non-permissive environment, a more non-permissive environment against this sort of abuse and predation upon God's precious and innocent children.
Are you surprised at all by the lack of, I don't want to say response, it almost seems like many of our elected officials, the people that we elected put in office, they're kind of ambivalent about this. I don't know why that is. Can you enlighten me? Is there some disconnect, or don't they know the enormity of it?
Yeah, Doug. No, I think they understand the enormity of it. It goes right back to my first statement when I came on today, and it's right back to moral courage. It's easy. Look, I know a lot of warriors that have done heroic things in combat, and they will not stand up for the children in public, lest somebody not be approving of it. And so, conversely, we've got tiny little 5 foot tall, if that, Dr. Judith Reisman, who is a champion for the children like no other. And she has been publicly dogging and debunking sadomasochistic pedophile Alfred Kinsey's false studies on child sexuality for 50 years. She has moral courage. Bob Hamer, who went undercover inside the FBI, inside of NAMBLA, a pedophile organization, and got 8 undercover convictions on some of their senior pedophiles there. Bob has moral courage. We've got Jack Farmer from, he's worked in just about every federal agency on the national security level over the last few decades. There is no patriot that's contributed more to our national security than Jack Farmer. And all 3 of those people are on our board. All 3 of them were in Contraland. All 3 of them are champions for the children. All 3 of them dare to speak up the truth, and all 3 of them have moral courage. And that's what more Americans need. They need to be able to stand up and look inside themselves and say, you know what? I don't care if petty and bitter people who do less say ugly things about me. I'm going to stand up and I'm going to do right. I'm not going to live in fear. I'm going to stand up and take the high road, and I'm going to speak out on behalf of the children. I will speak out against evil, even if it's not culturally celebrated right now. The truth is timeless. The truth is universal. I will stand up and I will speak it with bold conviction because it is the truth, and let the haters fall on their swords all they want. And I think that's what's needed. So that's why a lot of the media officials, the public officials, and even people that claim to be child advocates have not yet celebrated and shared Contraland is because they lack the courage, or they're just petty and bitter and haven't found it in themselves to step up yet and help amplify this empowering truth for the children.
Amen. You know, when I had mentioned you were going to be on, I got an email asking how much it would cost, or how much it cost to watch Contraland.
That's a great question. And we spent 3 years filming this, and more expense than we wanted to, due to the adversity, the hostility that we had to fight through. But it ended up being about $750,000 in the end to get it filmed. Of course, we went to 5 countries around the world with operations of many types and several operations and 22 arrests, 100% conviction rate, and a couple of rescues, and just fantastic work. So, but it's a good faith public service alert. It's always been on my heart to just bring it to the people, and I didn't know how it was exactly going to be done, but in the end, we offered it up at no charge to the people. And it's on ContralandMovie.com. And not only is it free to you folks, but you're welcome to download it and upload it and publish it on all your own media. Feel free to do that. Please just don't edit it, because it stands on its own. Its integrity is absolute. So please just leave it as it is. But it is free to you as a good faith public service alert, because I mean for every human possible to see this, so that they can better help safeguard the children.
I love it. That alone is gonna cause people to have a major problem. Oh, what do you mean it's free? I love it. And yes, thank you for doing that, making that available. Because again, what an important work.
It's not free because it's a poor quality film. It's a high quality documentary. We could have gotten that if I were willing to wait however long it took to get probably big money for it on a major network. And I'm not against it being on major networks, but I was against waiting another 4 to 18 months, or however long it was going to take, to shop it to film festivals and pay all the gatekeepers and go through all the bureaucratic big Hollywood process of, you know, trying to get meetings with all the executives and have the different things. Once we started chatting with some of them, and I saw that the timeline was a very sluggish one, almost glacial in its pace, I was not willing to wait. Every day children are being taken. Every day children are being harmed. It weighs on my heart. I feel like there's a rush, and it's a timely issue. And I don't think that this is something that can should enjoy a casual approach. I'm in a hurry for the kids, and I want everybody else to be too, because we can't end this enough. We can't.
No, no, you're exactly right, and you're in the trenches all the time. And I want people to know that. Craig Sawyer is not a guy who sits behind a microphone or just simply creates videos. Well, you can see what he does in Contraland, and I think it's important to see. May I suggest to the people watching, if you choose to watch this, and I know you will, like I said, my goal is 100,072 hours to watch this and share it. You know what I'd like you guys to do? I don't know how much a movie is these days. You go to a movie. Well, you can't go to, I guess you can't go to movies anymore. I don't know. $5, $10, whatever, $20, whatever you can afford. You watch the movie, donate to Vets for Child Rescue. The link will be in the program description box, as if you were paying for a movie at the very least. Definitely more if you have the means, because it costs money to bring productions like this to you. And not only that, it costs money to actually go out and do this, to save the children, to put predators behind bars, to expose the darkness. And Craig has done all of that. And there it is right there. It's so easy. Folks, please go for the 1,000. In fact, put another extra decimal point or two or three in there. That's how much I believe in this, in Contraland and Craig Sawyer. Craig, is there anything else? I mean, I don't know what else to say if I haven't asked. I mean, we didn't rehearse this interview, so you tell me if there's anything else that we should be talking about or we should be – or any place else you want to go.
I think we've covered it, Doug, in good faith. I think we've hit the points. You know, people say that Edmund Burke said, evil prevails when good men do nothing. And I say – if evil is prevailing and you do nothing, how can you be a good man?
Amen. Are you going to come out?
A lot of people sit on the sidelines hoping, and here's a way that they can do a little something, even if they just buy a t-shirt or a hat or pitch in $5 or share it, that we can each and should each do a little something to help this organization and our mission. Otherwise, how can you look at children with any compassion and know that you had an opportunity to help and just decided not to? So,
but by the way, I love your shirts. For some reason, I'm into shirts this week. I love your shirts. I don't wear casual clothes that often. You sent me a Vets for Child Rescue shirt, and I wore that this past weekend, and got a couple of comments on it, actually. So, somebody asking me what that was, and somebody asked me if I changed jobs, actually. So, but the high quality shirts. So yeah, get the merch. There's a lot there to choose from, hats and lanyards, of course, and a lot of things. But you know, again, I want to thank you for everything you do. The last question I'll ask you, you know, we together, you and I, but you especially. Have really been bombarded with these people who I really don't care to give oxygen to, with some of these crazy things that, hey, the military rescued, 3,000, 4,000 children or whatever. And people are falling for it. I mean, if everyone who fell for that supported you, you probably wouldn't have any, you'd be golden. I guess
it would be fantastic.
Yeah.
It would be fantastic. If all the people that believe that story, and the story that Doug's talking about, everybody, if you don't know, is a couple people, quite frankly, with very serious criminal and psychological backgrounds. And this speaks to vetting the source. A lot of people didn't bother to vet the source and see who it was that put this story out. But last year, they claimed that there's giant military underground war beneath California. And thousands and thousands of children rescued. And then when the COVID-19 epidemic broke out, and Reverend Franklin Graham opened up his tents, the medical facilities to help there, and New York City and Central Park, and the Comfort Mercy ships came in to provide medical support if needed for overflow. they superimposed that same story from last year over New York City and said, yeah, there's a giant military war beneath New York City and 35,000 children were rescued and everyone cheered. Yay, yay, yay. And I cautioned people. I said, wait a minute, folks, I'm trained on underground facilities and I'm in the counter trafficking realm and real operations. And we're not seeing any indication that that story is true or could be true. Please just stay grounded in the facts. And then another wave of haters and resentment. They didn't want that not to be true. And man, if it could be true, I would celebrate it. I want every child possible. But when you see people that survive by YouTube clicks, they monetize their YouTube channel. So everybody that they can get to click on it, they get paid by YouTube. And so these people are LARPers, live action role players. They don't do anything but create these fantastical wild stories. And so that's the problem. It's disinformation and it destroys the credibility for the real cause.
And there
and
it is.
So there, yep. The point is how many hundreds of thousands of people, and we call it hope porn because these predators that put out these fake stories prey on well-meaning people's hopes that there will be a giant turnaround and a massive rescue for children. And so they're preyed upon for their hopes. And we call it hope porn because it's a psychological type of predation to use people for their clicks, to monetize their YouTube channels for the predators. So please just stay grounded in the facts, folks. Every time I've called out one of these stories, I've been proven right. They've been fake stories.
That's right.
And there are real rescues going on by law enforcement and other NGOs doing it around the world. And so support them and pay attention to the real operations, and you can have a real positive effect. So, yes, sir.
Well, thank you for addressing that.
If those people supported us, we'd be in a lot better place.
Yeah, and you know, I really didn't want to go there, but I'm glad I did because I'm thank you so much for addressing that because it really adversely impacts the legitimate organizations like yours and stuff that we try to do. So here's the answer, folks. At the end of the day, ContraLandMovie.com, right? There it is, ContraLandMovie.com. Watch it, share it, and support VetsForChildRescue.org. The donate is right on ContraLand. Just donate there as if you're going to go to a movie. 100,000 in 72 hours. If we do 200,000, I'm certainly not going to be surprised or disappointed, obviously. But let's do a quarter of a million. It doesn't matter. But we need to get the message out. We need to get it out right now because now is the time. And again, this is the real deal. And it's right there, ContraLandMovie.com. Craig, thank you so very much, my friend. I really appreciate your time, and appreciate all you do. I really do.
Thank you, Doug. God bless you, genuinely, for bringing truth and clarity to the people in such a crazy time of disinformation. I'm proud of this interview. I'm going to share it far and wide because so many people need to hear it. And thank you for doing your part. You're a champion for truth. And in doing this and supporting Vets for Child Rescue, you're a champion for the children. So God bless you, sir.
God bless you as well. You keep safe out there. Keep your head down. And we'll be praying for you and continued success. May God bless you, my friend. And again, congratulations on ContraLand. We'll be talking to you. And we'll be seeing sure. you. I'm going to see you. I'm going to take you out for our lunch. Stuff. All right.
All right, man. Let's do it.
All right. Folks, that was Craig Sawyer. ContraLandMovie.com, ContraLandMovie.com. You got to see it. I'm telling you, you've got to see it. And to think it's high quality production value is just absolutely incredible, incredibly good. And to understand, to really understand the mechanics of what Craig Sawyer went through and his team went through to put this together and to know, and this is the important thing, to know that he has not stopped. He is not stopping, and his efforts continue today. And anyone who says, well, wait a second, they're going after the guys going after the children and not really rescuing children. Do you think he's going to tell you everything that they're doing?
that would be counterproductive. So just trust me when I tell you there's a whole lot going on behind the scenes that would be very, very counterproductive to talk about. I'm very proud to know him. I'm very proud to call him my friend. And I'm even more proud that he was on the Hagman Report again, Craig Sawyer, ContralandMovie.com website as well. That's the number 4childrescue.org. All right. Before the top of the hour, before we bring Stan Dale on, I just want to touch on a couple of things. You know, I don't know how many people have seen this. Everyone is waiting for the justice to kick in, right? Justice in terms of Obamagate. And you know, here's the thing. People, they're laughing at us. The communist lunatics, the communists who are in this country, who have infiltrated this country, the government, and some of our, or all of our academia, and others, they're laughing at us because people are saying, hey, you know what? Just wait. You're going to see prosecutions. Obama is going to be prosecuted. Just wait. Wait until you see pantsuit Hillary being perp walked in orange. Eric the Tech, do we have time for that bar video? You think?
Yeah, just give me a second to cue it.
All right. Yeah. You want to think again, folks? You want to think again? I wanted to save a little bit of time for this video. This will speak for itself. All right. And just let me know when you're ready for it. You ready? All right. Just watch this. A question and answer session is not needed afterwards. So just go ahead and watch this. Here it goes.
And secondly, President Trump has recently said that he wants to see the Justice Department prosecute figures of the Obama administration, President Obama and Joseph Biden, for what he calls crimes. Is that something DOJ will do?
Okay, let me ask the director to respond to the first question, and then I'll come back and answer the second. Pete, I'm not going to comment on what the president or Vice President Biden, for that matter, say in connection with their campaigns, but I will address the role of the Department of Justice. I think, as you know, I've commented since I have been Attorney General and even during my confirmation hearings that over the past few decades, there have been increasing attempts to use the criminal justice system as a political weapon. The legal tactic has been to gin up allegations of criminality by one's political opponents based on the flimsiest of legal theories. This is not a good development. This is not good for our political life, and it's not good for the criminal justice system. And as long as I'm Attorney General, the criminal justice system will not be used for partisan political ends. And this is especially true for the upcoming elections in November. We live in a very divided country right now, and I think that it is critical that we have an election where the American people are allowed to make a decision, a choice, between President Trump and Vice President Biden based on a robust debate of policy issues. And we cannot allow this process to be hijacked by efforts to drum up criminal investigations of either candidate. And I'm committed that this election will be conducted without this kind of interference. Any effort to pursue an investigation of either candidate has to be approved by me. Now, what happened to the president, and I've said this many times, what happened to the president in the 2016 election and throughout the first 2 years of his administration was abhorrent. It was a grave injustice, and it was unprecedented in American history. The law enforcement and intelligence apparatus of this country were involved in advancing a false and utterly baseless Russian collusion narrative against the president. The proper investigative and prosecutive standards of the Department of Justice were abused, in my view, in order to reach a particular result. We saw two different standards of justice emerge, one that applied to President Trump and his associates, and the other that applied to everybody else. We can't allow this ever to happen again. The Durham investigation is trying to get to the bottom of what happened, and it will determine whether there were any federal laws broken, and if there were, those who broke the laws will be held to account. But this cannot be, and it will not be, a tit-for-tat exercise. We are not going to lower the standards just to achieve a result. The only way to stop this vicious cycle, the only way to break away from a dual system of justice, is to make sure that we scrupulously apply the single and proper standard of justice for everybody. Now, under the longstanding standards of the department, criminal charges are appropriate only when we have enough evidence to prove each element of a crime beyond a reasonable doubt. That is the standard we're applying. Now, I have a general idea of how Mr. Durham's investigation is going. And as I have indicated, some aspects of the matter are being examined as potential crimes. But we have to bear in mind what the Supreme Court recently reminded us of in the Bridgegate case. As the court said there, there's a difference between an abuse of power and a federal crime. Not every abuse of power, no matter how outrageous, is necessarily a federal crime. Now, as to President Obama and Vice President Biden, whatever their level of involvement, based on the information I have today, I don't expect Mr. Durham's work will lead to a criminal investigation of either man. Our concern over potential criminality is focused on others. Thanks for your question, Pete. The next question.
Any questions, folks? You might want to go back and listen to that and watch that again. What level, tell me again, what level of chess is that? Go ahead. I'll wait. Go ahead. Watch it again. Any questions? I didn't think so. You're listening to the Hagmann Report, where truth can't be silenced. Stan Dale from standale.com. Last week he took the week off, and we missed him. I hope he's feeling better. And, of course, his website again, standale.com, D-E-Y-O, standale.com. Folks, if you haven't done so already, and this is worth, I'm telling you, this is worth doing. MyEMPShield.com. Hagmann is the code. Or what is it, Eric? I keep forgetting about this. I keep screwing this up. Is it slash Hagmann or? Talk to me, brother.
It's EMPShield.com/Hagmann or use promo code Hagmann.
Wow.
For $50 off.
You do that so well. With that, my brother, Stan Dale, how are you, sir?
Very good, thank you. It was a good week to rest. The gardening kind of got to my back and stuff, so anyway.
Well, you're looking good.
Well, I'm looking very red on your screen when it comes back to me. Wow, I hope it's not that bad over where you are.
Yeah, you are kind of red, although maybe not as red as you're seeing. It is red. Did you get a sunburn, or is that just
too close
to the sun?
Eric has to adjust something in the video, I guess. I don't know.
What are you doing, Eric? Can you adjust anything, Eric?
I can do my best, yeah.
All right. So, but anyway, no, you look good. And I'm glad you're back with us this week, and I missed you last week, and I hope you got some rest, and I don't know. Spring has finally hit this area, where I live. It's now above 65, which, wow, middle of May. So anyway.
Well, it was 90, It was 91 here yesterday. 91 Fahrenheit. Are you jealous?
Yeah. Yeah. See, the older I get, if it drops below 80, like I'm cold. Eric laughs at me and my wife laughs at me. She says, what's wrong with you? I'm cold, man. It's cold. Anyway, 91, that's pretty, it's pretty warm. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. You're a legend. I was watching several videos on YouTube, and every single time there was any video with an ad, I saw your EMP shield. I thought, man, that's, I know the guys. I know them. I thought, man, I'm proud.
Yeah.
I'm just so proud. And that works. I'm telling you, we had some electrical work done here. And the electrician said, oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, he's going to be contacting you for, because he's got like a whole bunch of people that he wants to outfit with the, protect with the EMP shield. So, I'm telling you folks, if you haven't done so now, do it now. And if you don't mind answering a question, because undoubtedly somebody on the comments is going to say, well, what good is it to have you protect your own equipment if the grid's going to be down from a coronal mass ejection or Carrington type event or a EMP, you know? Can you answer that question before it gets asked again?
Yeah. If you don't have your own backup power systems, then the reason you protect your electronics is in the event that power comes back on, which is highly probable in a number of locations across the planet, because of various governments and organizations doing fail-safes for their main power supply. Now, the United States, I know about that directly because we are working in close contact with the White House on this and with the Department of Defense and Homeland Security and all the military arms. We have been for over a year and a half protecting infrastructure, and we've now branched out to helping power supply, say, to major cities. We did a test case on Texas, one of the major cities there. And so when the power does come back on in your neighborhood, this will let your computers and other devices that would have gotten fried, you know, controllers for air conditioners, for refrigerators, freezers, TV, all that kind of stuff. It'll let them work. Now, if the power doesn't come on, and if you don't have backup power yourself, then these items will be negotiable for trade to those people who do have access to backup power. It is our hope that we will be able to restore the great majority of power supplies to homes across the country. Our first action was to defend the country first, you know, our larger government organizations to keep us running. And then secondly, to go to individuals' homes. And then thirdly, to go to cities. So it takes time, and we are working on it. So that's why you should have an EMP shield for when power is restored, or for bartering, you know, for power from locals if you don't have backup power yourself. Other than that, you know, you're kind of out of luck. So we've done the best we can to protect homes, generators, solar systems, wind systems, marine systems, RVs, ham radio systems. You know, we've got some 35 different products that we've developed and are still developing more, as I say, to help communities that are on community power supplies. Anyway, that's why.
There you
go. Long answer.
Well, no, and thank you for addressing that. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to isolate this section and put it as a standalone, because people ask that question all the time. And hey, I did that first too, and very well explained. All right. Stan, wherever you want to start, let's start. It's up to you, my friend.
Well, you mentioned that your temperatures were just, you know, kind of still in the low zone and still not to spring. Now, we've been in spring temperatures off and on, you know, down to the 35-ish up to the 91 yesterday. And we've already planted our squash and peas and peppers and onions and potatoes, Jerusalem artichokes, lettuce, watermelon, cantaloupe. Let's see, what else did I forget? Peppers, got those. Yeah, okay, that's majority. Oh, we got carrots too. And onions in large amounts. Now, our underground plants are doing well. They're putting up the green leaves. You know, our plants that are tubers, they don't require fertilization or pollination by bees or other insects. However, those plants that we've planted that have blossoms come out, like tomatoes and squash and watermelon, cantaloupe, those things are not doing so well. They're putting up green leaves. They're growing. But the flowers come up and they don't pollinate. Now I've even, you know, we've looked at our bees. They're here. They come. They drink the water. We've put in marigolds to draw them in, which seems to be helping. But in the absence of the bees, I've been using a technique with a vibrating toothbrush. I saw it on the internet a couple of years ago and I tried it, on our indoor plants, you know, the indoor, tomato plants we were growing, the cherry tomatoes. And all I had to do was touch that brush, vibrating brush at the maximum setting. Yeah, there you go. There you go. That's, sorry, I forgot to label the slides today. Anyway, it vibrates the back of the plant, and sometimes you can put the brush part inside the plant to not pollen off the center part, so it goes down and makes the fertile, you know, plant, you know, the squash in this case. Now over at to the right of that, Eric, there's another toothbrush shot showing how we did it with our tomatoes, tomato blossoms. Now what is happening though is I've been doing it the way I've always done. Sometimes I put the brush part inside the flower. Sometimes I put it at the back where the hard part of the toothbrush vibrates the whole flower. But darn, you know, that hasn't done any good. We don't have you know, like fruit coming out of it. We don't have tomatoes yet. Mm. Now I've been investigating why, you know, what is causing this? And the bees, you know, I understand they need to be attracted to a place, and I understand that they use ultraviolet to navigate landing spots, you know, to know where to pollinate, you know, to gain pollen themselves on their legs, take it back to the hive. And certainly the bees have been drinking water to go cool their hives, you know, fan the hives and keep the temperature correct. But they're just not pollinating. Now I thought, well, I've seen them in the flowers. Why isn't it working? So I know that they use ultraviolet primarily to navigate a certain bandwidth of ultraviolet from the sun. But they are also sensitive to the intensity of the light coming from the sun in that particular wavelength. In fact, all of them, but that's what they navigate with. So I thought, well, you know, what is the sun doing? It's, you know, if you go up, Eric, about 2, 3, 4, you'll see a red graph saying increasing solar irradiance. And click on that graph. And I want to show you something a little bit disturbing here. Since the 1700s, the total light coming out of the sun and all the measurable frequencies we can measure, you know, obviously we can do more now than we used to, but the total irradiance, the brightness of the sun has been going up, particularly from the 1900s or early 1900. You know, it got pretty bad in geophysical year around 1960, 1958, somewhere in there. And the general curve is up, you know, getting more light from the sun in all the frequencies. So I looked around, and if you look underneath the, Eric, underneath that line on the picture shows us the kind of an orange looking sun. It has the title of the sun's sound waves reveal that the surface is thinning, and click on that article. Now this is really, really disturbing. It says that the outer layers of the sun are becoming more sensitive to medium and higher frequencies, which occur on the sun, you know, vibrations from all the explosions and stuff. It shows that some areas of the solar surface have weakened. It's thinning. The sun's outer layers are thinning in places, showing that, you know, it's going through a change, and the change is not good, because if it gets too thin, we're going to see stuff blow off. It's going to go to the next stage of its solar evolution, its solar lifetime. Now, is this brightness, you know, coming from you know, the ultraviolet from this thinning, letting more stuff through or more being produced. I don't know. I do know that I've been monitoring the magnetic fields. Oh, by the way, I've been telling you that I couldn't find the magnetic field maps for the sun since March 13th this year. They just weren't appearing on the Solar Dynamic Observatory, the SDO site, and they aren't still. However, I found that the SDO was getting the data from the from another site. I forget the name of it. I haven't put them up yet. I'll do it later tomorrow.
I was going to say, you sure you want to mention it so it doesn't disappear? But go ahead.
No, no, I got it. I've downloaded tons of data, so okay. I've got everything from March 13th on. And I was able then to start tracking the magnetic field changes. And right now, the changes appear to be stabilizing with a firm North Pole and a firm South Pole in the sun. The wandering tilt and everything in the sun's magnetic field that we observed in late March has stabilized now, which is good. Now, I started then looking at earthquakes, total earthquakes over Richter 1, for the last 11, 12 years, to correlate those with the sun's activity with this magnetic field. Now, these are reports that are going to require me to generate two new sub-websites off of our show images page, which, well, I'll do that tomorrow. It's just I ran out of time this evening. But the earthquakes, are increasing. The highest number of those that I can find in the last, 20 years is occurring now. Now, these tiny earthquakes add to those numbers, but a huge number. This is a record number of earthquakes across the planet in April and early May. Why? Is it related to the sun's changes? Because we know the solar wind varies, the pressure of that varies. Our magnetic field is affected by the magnetic field of the sun. Our magnetic field is weakening. The sun's magnetic field is strengthened and solid and stable, but that is causing our magnetic field to readjust itself because it's very weak and very susceptible to the magnetic field of the sun. So, you think, well, okay, big deal, Stanley. I then went on to another article that was talking about the location of the North Pole moving. Now, we've talked about this before, but I found out something earlier today that is really quite extraordinary. Now, if you go up, Eric, above the graph of the, the red line graph up to the next row and over to the right, you'll see North Pole moving. Does this relate to the Earth's tilt of 23.5 degrees? Now, click on the image itself, which is a big image, I grant you, but it had to be big to show you something. And zoom in to the top part, and I'm going to show you something here, which is kind of neat. The green dots are where the sun has moved in, the last, 20 years or so. And it's moving rapidly. You can see the dots are spaced apart by about 35 miles on average. The red dot with the arrow pointing to it is where it is today. The pink dots are where it is projected to be at the same rate of movement. This is a magnetic pole, right? Now, when you look at where those pale arrows or pale circles go, if you go down to the next picture, Eric, yeah, and if you look at where they're headed, direct straight line, here's this great deep hole in the North Pole region, and it will be where the magnetic pole will end up if it keeps going at the rate it is. Why? What caused the hole in the polar region there, which at some point is, about 5,600 feet deeper than the surface of the Earth there? It's about a mile deep hole. Now, was this or is this the remnant of the hole that Bird allegedly flew over in his plane and went down into an inner Earth? I don't know. But if you zoom back out and look at the whole picture and see the track that led up to this, something has been moving and causing a hole to move up to this point on the surface of the Earth. And in the top portion, you see that yellow line, distance between polar locations. You think, well, that's 1,700 miles between where it is now and where it was over closer to Iceland. And I took that distance, 1,713 miles, and I divided it by the arc of the hemisphere, the northern hemisphere, to see if it would tell me how many, you know, how many degrees that is from where it is now to where it was. And it came out to about, oh, I don't know, 25 degrees or so. And it, here we go. Anyway, let me just get that there. 24.8 degrees. Well, the tilt of the Earth off its axis at the moment is roughly 23.5 degrees. And it varies, you know, between normally the measured tilt of our axis, you know, in our orbit around the sun, it varies from 22.1 degrees to 24.5 degrees, and we're at 23.5 degrees now, roughly, maybe 23.4. So was the movement of the magnetic pole of the Earth responsible for recording the tilt? When everything was upright and perfect, that hole, the North Pole, would have been near Iceland. As we were impacted by an asteroid, that's my hypothesis. The asteroid, the Kudapa asteroid that hit on the east coast of what was originally India, you know, a larger mass than it is now. When it hit there, it caused the surface of the Earth, the crust, the thin crust, to tilt maybe 25, 26 degrees and then start righting itself slowly over the years. Now, one astronomer who's now deceased did a study of that mathematically of the spinning Earth, and it had been, you know, tilted at the time of the impact of that asteroid around 2345 BC. And I think that's when this all occurred. Then he ran it backwards to see how long it would take the Earth to recover and where it would recover to. And so we're now approaching close to the time when it's got to recover. And I'd say we're within about, oh, if it continues at the rate it's doing now, about 10 times ahead of about, 10 years, something like that, 11 years, which is kind of interesting that it will finally right itself. And it will align our spin. It will get rid of our seasons. And this might be what is happening now. The change in the ultraviolet, the change in our attitude of our magnetic field will eventually result in the crust also trying to realign to a vertical position. These are all things I'm studying, but it astounded me to see the path of this wandering magnetic pole and the distance of that arc showing that it would be just about what explains our tilt, you know, of our axis, which gives us the seasons. So if we're going to start righting the surface somehow to align with the magnetic field, and even if we don't, the alignment of the magnetic field affects insects and animals and all kinds of things as far as what they do and where they go and how they navigate, we're going to see changes, which obviously something is happening now. I mean, we're seeing climate change that is not induced by human activity. This is something solar and our magnetic field itself. Things aren't right here. I mean, we're seeing drought here, like, hugely, in the kind of the breadbasket here in the Southwest. And it's going to get bad this year, really bad. And we've noticed how dry it is here now for probably 2 years. I mean, you know, our nose, we have to take medicine just to, lubricate the nose and stuff because it's so dry, you start to get bloody noses here. So anyway, guys, that's, I've got a lot to talk about, but this really bothers me. And it was a new discovery on my part here about this hollow Earth theory or hypothesis. Whether or not the entire Earth is hollow or not, I don't think it is, but there are layers. And I think that there is a layer just underneath our crust where gravity reverses and points back up toward the surface instead of down toward the core. But that's a whole other argument that I'm eventually going to be able to show you. I've been making the videos to show you. In fact, let me just see here. Just give me a second here. And let me, let's see, where is that button? I've got a button which lets me show you a different, I'm going to show you what a gravitational field looks like here, according to, you know, Einstein type physics and things like that. But it's not the way, or from the cause that they describe gravity with. Oh, come on, here we go. Okay, I'm going to show you this one right here, I think. Okay, do you see how the Earth in the middle of that blue globe is depressing space-time. That's what they call those, that grid that we're looking at. Space-time is depressed by the gravitational field of Earth and the moon. You can see in the upper right-hand portion of that. Well, all right, big deal, you say. So I say, okay, I want you to look at what I was able to produce. Let's see, where have we got this here? I'm just looking for that. Okay. Okay. Now, I used the Coke bottle experiment that I did years ago and shown on numerous occasions since 2005 when I did it. Here you see the top layer, the surface of Coca-Cola in a 2-liter bottle. And I vibrated the table underneath it with just, normal speakers being run by a frequency generator. And this is in an audible frequency range, which is annoying to hear, so I'm not doing that to you at the moment. But here you see in the upper left-hand part where it says, or where you can see kind of a depression where the ripples come out from, that would be the sun's, quote-unquote, gravitational field. And then where the Coke bottle depression is, it looks just like the mathematical model that they go to all these, you know, gyrations and 10 dimensions and that kind of stuff to generate that drawing I just showed you, that blue drawing, to show you the gravitational field. When, if you look at it, the field of space, the fine structure of space from which everything is constructed, is like a fluid. And if you look underneath that Coke drop there, it is sustained by frequencies coming from the sun and from its own spin. That little Coke bead there is spinning like crazy. And, I think I've got another image which shows, okay. I'm looking for one that shows a moon. Okay. Now they're too close together here and they do attract each other. And this is the big one is Earth and the lesser size is, of course, the moon. Still in this Coke bottle video that I made. Now, I'm going to annoy you for just a bit, I think, here. I'm going to put up the short video of that, if it'll show here. There we go. See how the waves are vibrating and how they're all interlinked? The fluid of space solution is a much more complex, a horribly complex mathematical equation, even with supercomputers. There you can see the table and how it's vibrating it. And, but this does show that the true way to analyze the structures and their behavior in our universe is to use fluids and how fluids behave. See, I created that thing there just by vibrating an off frequency. And there are things that repel when their gravitational fields are different. So anyway, oh gosh, lots of things to talk about today.
That's pretty impressive. I like that. I don't want to seem obtuse or thick. What does that show? Which obviously it shows the complexity, but the space time, relative to space time continuum.
Well, space time is the way they've looked at observed results and bending of space time, bending of light rays and gravity and things like that elsewhere in the universe relative to us. So this is the way, based upon a mistake they made in Einstein's, equation and also in what he took from Maxwell, Michelson-Morley experiment,
right,
which showed, that there was no ether space, you know, and that light traveled the same velocity everywhere. Well, they made a mistake there, and I corrected that in the Cosmic Conspiracy book at the back end. I show detailed proof mathematically where they made their mistake. If they had not done this, then the fluid solutions, the fluid mechanics solutions would have been way ahead of where we are now. And I suggest that they return to that now and look at space as not space-time, but a fluid whose molecules, if you wish, or atoms, are so small that they're, you know, a million times smaller than our smallest subatomic particle we've been able to detect. And when God created these things, in the Genesis account, he spoke into nothingness. And the force of that beach, you know, into this fluid of space caused huge ripples and vortices. It's like taking a cigar puff, you know, a big, you know, jaw full of cigar smoke in a bar somewhere and blowing it out with great force. And you'll see little curlies form everywhere, little willy willies and vortices. And in 3D space, this forms galaxies, galactic clusters, star systems, planets, moons. All of these are a result of one initial spoken word from the creator, which distributed itself in this very calm fluid.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's, you see how it works? I mean, yeah. the Bible is telling you the truth. And I gotta say, I was, I guess I cheat a bit. It's not my own, you know, clever mind that determined this. When I was out of my body and nearly died, I asked a silly question of God. I said, I was out there and I was seeing all the stars and galaxies and things. And I said, how does all this work? And there was a big download. And it took me a few years and dream revealings or dream assimilation of it to get it all clear. But I saw it all in one burst, which was so much that when I came back into my body, I felt it falling off the sides of my body, and it took a while to reassimilate it, you know, years. But that's where it came from. And I was really shown by the creator how it all worked. And there are other things involved in that, but that's where it came from. And it makes sense when you look at it. I mean, it's the fluid of space and vibrations in it. And those excessively strong vibrations create curls and spin. And you do not have quote unquote gravity without spin around an axis. Every atom has a spin axis. Every subatomic particle has a spin axis. Everything that has gravity has spin. And if you, well, I've analyzed this. I haven't put it up in my papers yet, the gemstone scrolls, but scroll number two or paper number two shows how this happens, that gravity is not a one-dimensional force. It's not just attracting toward the center. Things, depending upon their mass, things orbit a gravitational center, you know, where you have spin, depending upon their mass, you know, the density of the subatomic particles, the atomic particles. So if you were to drill a hole under this hypothesis down to the center of, say, the Earth, there would be a point where the reflected waves, you saw in my Coke bottle thing where there were waves bouncing around that Earth droplet there. There are reflected waves that go down into the core of the planet, and they hit each other, and they bounce back out and hit the density of space, that fine structure we're talking about, fluid. And they're going so fast that they reflect back from space, back towards the core of the planet, meet each other, and bounce back like that. And where these waves coming in to the core of the planet and the waves coming out of the core into space, where these waves meet, they form a lock like that, an overlock. And that is an orbit where a planet, depending upon its mass, will lock into its spin, or its orbit around the sun. Ask yourself this. Why don't all of these planets just suck into the sun? It's so massive. Its gravity is so strong. Why don't we just suck into it?
Good point.
You know, and this is why. It's because we're locked in these overlapping divergent and convergent, you know, like waves going into the Earth, waves coming back out of the Earth. We're locked into that kind of invisible torus or donut around the sun. And every planet, its orbit is where it has to be for its mass. I hope that's somewhat clear.
I just had a flash of Standale's brain being on display at the Smithsonian. And here I am. Started out talking about pollinating the bushes with an electric toothbrush. My biggest problem is getting the pollen out of my teeth after that. I do that anyway. Never mind. Very interesting though. That is really an interesting. When you think about it, especially with the Bible, you bring the Bible into this, and boy, I'll tell you what, Christians, the Christian Bible is right on the money. How can anyone doubt that? And then, of course, the frequency, the way you explained it. How beautiful is that? I mean, really. Wow.
Well, I hope I made it in less than $5 words, as Holly tells me. Make it understandable, because you got to translate what you see in your mind to what people understand, you know, word wise and picture wise. And I hope I did that anyway.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I can't imagine, and being serious, I can't imagine asking the question, you know, how does all this work? And then, you know, the download it would, I mean, I'll tell you what.
Well, you know what?
It would, yeah, go ahead.
When I was out there and I asked that question and I was shown how it all worked, I remember saying, ah, okay, that's simple. I understand that now. Yes, well, out there it's fine. Your mind is a lot bigger, but when you squeeze back out in that tight little shoe, your body, stuff falls over the side for a long time until you gradually assimilate it. And that's one of the things at the Air Force Academy, when they did a test on us, an experiment with my class back, class of 67, we were given programmed instruction, like to read a book. It would flash on a screen in front of us at several hundred pages a second, and you couldn't blink, you know, close your eyes during the time, and it would go bzzz like that on the screen while you're looking at the screen, and all you would see is gray kind of fluctuations on the screen. But then for days after that, when we slept, it would be assimilating, you know, what we had seen in that the pictures of pages of a book. We were reading this book. And so likewise, what I saw out of my body had to be assimilated over a period of time, which was longer than a few days. It was a few years because of the complexity of all these things. Anyway, that's enough of that stuff. Oh, hey, let me just tell Eric how to get there. I do apologize again. I'll get these numbers corrected later tonight. Anyway, let's see, 1, 2, 3. Okay, 3 rows up from the bottom of the current images, Eric, you'll see pictures of the lunar surface. And I went to, you know, the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter camera, which in the last, like 5 years has been orbiting the moon. I think it's 5 years. Anyway, you can see when you go to the site. And it's been taking pictures, high-resolution pictures of the lunar surface. I mean, really high resolution. In fact, the image on the right of that row is really a small chunk of one photograph that I got from them showing the landing spot for Apollo 11. It is so detailed that it shows the footprints, you know, the pathways that the astronauts took around, you know, exploring around the lander. If you see that white arrow, that is pointing to a spot there, you know, where they landed. And so if you go back to, let's see, I think you can you, let me just see, I think you can zoom up on that. Let me just see if I can follow along. Yeah, if you click the zoom up on that at the tip of the arrow, you will actually see the lunar lander, you will see the seismometer and a few other instances, and these gray little, you know, pathways there where the astronauts walked and did their tests. Just click on that and zoom it up,
man,
Eric.
Yeah, I got to see this. Okay. So.
Yeah, look at that. Look at that.
Okay, what am I looking at? At the tip of the arrow.
Okay. Go over to the right. You see that? Eric, you need to just move your image slightly to the right on your screen. There you go. A little bit further. Okay. Now, that is the top of the lunar lander. And, you know, obviously, the guys aren't there anymore, but that's the top of it. And those kind of gray little wobbly pathways are where they walked doing their various experiments and planting the flag and putting the camera in, the seismometer, and all that stuff. Okay?
So those are the footprints.
Yeah, go over to the next image on the show images page, Eric, and you'll see tracing the paths of the astronauts. Okay, click on that picture, and then zoom it up, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
I'm just curious. Wouldn't, well, I guess they wouldn't. Wouldn't the lunar wind kind of cover those up?
Make your part lunar.
Lunar wind. Cover that up or no?
You have to have an atmosphere before you have wind.
Silly me.
Yeah, okay. Silly you.
All right. What the heck?
But anyway.
Yeah.
Go. All right. Now, this is showing the pathways for various parts of their excursion, which was on one of the sites analyzing this. But we did land on the moon. I've even seen the close-up photographs of Apollo 14's landing spot as well, same way. And this is so integral to the lunar images we have that there's, in my mind, no way that they could they could alter the image, you know. Go to the leftmost image on the show images page and click on that, and that shows you the image without the pathways being enumerated or whatever, or outlined in greens and yellows. This is just a pure photograph with these labels showing what parts you're looking at. So I'm just telling you that this lunar landing being a farce argument is a joke. It is wrong. It is so totally wrong. Look, Russia and China, you know, particularly Russia, if they had a grief with us, you know, in the race for the space and the landing on the moon, if Russia had a joke or an argument with us about it, they would say, okay, you guys cheated. We've taken close-up photographs and images. We've looked at the lunar rock samples we got a hold of, and it's all a lie. It's Earth-based stuff. They would certainly expose us if we had done some sort of skullduggery to fake the lunar landings, all of them. You know, I just wanted to say this, in my opinion, is putting the lid on all this conspiracy stuff about we never went to the moon, it was faked in Hollywood, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, these are things like empirical, like proof from real things that are taken now that show that we did land. And so that's, I just wanted to say that.
So the rock I have in my curio cabinet in my office that says moon rock, that's real then. I can.
Where did you get it?
I can't tell you. No, I'm joking. But yeah, I often wondered, you know, about people who said, well, we couldn't have gone to the moon. I mean, look, it was a hell of a feat. That's for sure, given the stuff they had at the time. But, yeah, I would say that we would have been outed by now, had we not.
Right. And also the moon, went through a stage like the Earth did, and it could have been from, in fact, look at slide, right above those lunar images and the row above that on the left. You'll see the moon might not be as a dead rock after all. And you click on the picture and you will see where they have found the equivalent of our ring of fire in the Pacific. It is tectonic plate separations. And when I look at that, there's two causes I can see that would have caused the moon earlier in its development to have created this tectonic plate ridge around. You see an impact crater right in the middle of that, and down beneath it, there's an even bigger impact crater. So between them, or either one or both of them, they created this tectonic plate movements on the surface of the moon. And the moon cooled after that. I don't think that we're seeing much tectonic plate activity, but there might be some. Certainly we've been using seismometers up there to determine earthquakes and where they're coming from, and so this is what they show. But basically the moon's crust is cooled, and there is a void inside, and they've observed this when they dropped off some orbital package that was up in orbit around the moon, and they crashed it into the moon's surface, and that crash generated shock waves that we were able to then monitor. And you would think that shock wave from an impact might go for, I don't know, 30 seconds, a minute or something, you know, and reverberate around it, and that'd be it, like an earthquake would do. But no, it lasted for over 38 minutes. The moon rang like a bell. The surface of it, you know, the crust, when impacted, rang like a bell, which meant it cooled in a form that was like crystalline and solid. So this is another argument for there might be a cavity within the Earth, you know, a void shell and things like that. The moon is proving that with the tests that have been done there. Anyway.
Were you referencing the hollow Earth theory?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah, sorry, what did I say?
No, you said it correctly. I just wanted to make sure I understood that properly. Okay. Yeah, I was curious. I tuned into a video where I think it was a gentleman who died supposedly was shown hell and was shown hell into the, you know, hell was inside the earth. And so sorry, my mind wandered there for a moment. Don't mind me. I'm still wondering how my pen works. You know, you're talking about, and I'm still looking at rudimentary objects. Okay.
You know, Doug, I experience the same thing. My mind is so full of so many things I'm researching and sharing that sometimes I can't even remember my own name. I think, right. What were we talking about? Yes. Okay.
That's why my wife writes my underwear, my, address and, phone number on my underwear and shirt labels.
Look, Holly and I both suffer from this at the moment, and I'm sure some of it's due to age, but you know, when you got so much on your mind, she's got her to-do list about to have 15 things on it every day, right?
Yep.
And you'll say, oh, I've got to go over to this room and get, what was that I was going to go over there for? You know, that quickly it's lost in the confusion of everything you're thinking about. So anyway, yeah, that's okay. I want to look at something, these Nevada earthquakes. If you'll go to about two lines above where we were talking, to where it says cross section of the San Joaquin Valley, and click on that image. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to explain something about what we're seeing. This is a cut, you know, through from the Pacific Ocean through inland toward where Nevada is. And if you'll look on the left side there where it says ARC, A-R-C, you'll see a solid black line on the left side of it, a solid black line on the right side of it, and over at the Franciscan plate or section, you'll see another black line going all the way down to the lower crust. And then if you go over to the right, you will see where it says Owens Valley in Sierra Nevada region, you'll see a black line going down to the lower crust as well. The upper layer of it. And why am I showing you this? Well, because these areas are showing the faults where the west coast of the United States will fracture and break up. These are the cracks, the fault lines being formed by the Pacific plate diving under the American plate, the craton. And eventually we're going to see pieces of the west coast fall, you know, break and fall into the sea. Portions of those will still be above sea level, but they will break and fall down. Now, go back to the show images page where that was, and then click on the picture on the right of that row, which shows Nevada earthquakes the last 7 days. Now, when you get there, you will see the USGS plot. Those red lines are the fault lines. The orange to yellow shading is the propensity for earthquakes. You know, these areas are prone to earthquakes. The darker the color, like, you know, the reddish orange, is the more prone to earthquakes along fault lines. And when the fault lines start to open up, even down beneath before it happens on the surface, the magma comes up through there. And you're going to start seeing more earthquakes and possibly some more magma flows or volcanic action. Now, in that picture we're looking at, if you enlarge it, you'll see over on the left the how many earthquakes we were looking at in this particular shot. There were about nearly 1,200 of them there. But when you click to zoom up, click over that cluster of earthquakes in Nevada. Eric, if you'd just back up and then click over that picture of the earthquakes in Nevada. There you go, right there. Uh-huh. Okay. Now, the cluster there, I forget how many, is probably close to 1,000 earthquakes have occurred over that Nevada region and then across the border. And it's in an area that's not in, you know, bright orange or, you know, heavier density propensity for earthquakes. Something new is happening there. And if you then click over on the top left of the picture, there's another cluster. You'll see it there near Ukiah, above Santa Rosa. What is happening there? That fault line is extending. So looking at these things, we're seeing rather interesting changes, especially if you consider at the lower right end of the San Joaquin Valley, where there's a long series of three clusters of earthquakes in great numbers there at Ridgecrest, and it's been that way for several months. These things are showing impressive changes in the subcrustal pressures and fault lines and their release. I think we're about to see some interesting times in California and, of course, north of there along the coastline in the Oregon and Washington region there to the Juan de Fuca plate. Another reason for people to be preparing, especially in California, Nevada, and New Mexico, prepare for loss of water, power, food supplies. It's going to be even worse than this coronavirus, episode. People are using our book, the Dare to Prepare book that Holly put together for us. And it tells so many things about how to prepare for earthquake, mitigate the after effects and everything like that, the cleanup plus preparing for the actual event. People need this, and they've been running off the shelves. In fact, I'm in a reprint right now. We're almost out of stock because people realize with the coronavirus, they need to get prepared for, various types of things, how to weather it, but also other things, simple stuff like, toilet paper and generators and, how to clean your water and how to collect water, from the environment and various other places. Get it. I've stopped our dealers that are handling it for us for a while because they order by the hundreds, and we just couldn't supply them right now because we're down to something like four or five cases, and that's it. So I should have new stock in within, let's see what they say, within 2 weeks. So that's important. And I mentioned before the Cosmic Conspiracy book where I talk about it in the appendices. The problem, the era in the Einstein's model for, how everything works, the density of space. I have a complete section in that book, and I've just ordered a reprint of that because we ran out of stock on that at the same time. We were just, kind of caught by surprise, I suppose, as everybody else was.
That's really a great book, Cosmic Conspiracy. I've learned so much from that book, and you touched on some of that that was in the book today. So folks, The Cosmic Conspiracy, if you don't have a copy, you got to get it. It's really a good book. And Dare to Prepare, of course, you need that because that is the ultimate, I believe, the ultimate guide for preparation. Go to standale.com. And by the way, while you're there, support Stan and Holly on Patreon. They so deserve it. Plus, they put out the content. It's just fantastic. So there it is. Thank you, Stan, for doing that, man.
You bet. Well, Holly's done most of the stuff there with her book, the Dare to Prepare book. Mine was more spiritual preparation, and hers was more physical, real earth type, preparation. And it is, look, we were even looking at the book together over the weekend, looking at various things that we could remember about generators and how to measure the number of watts that various, appliances in your house use, so that we could determine if we could afford to buy some solar panels to, protect our stuff as well. We only have generators and a limited fuel. So that's what we were using her book to look for, was how do we, how do we rate how much power we actually need from a solar power supply? Anyway, yeah. And if you look on our show images page, Eric, there's a picture of Nostradamus, fairly recognizable picture. He is saying, they think when they interpret it, that we're going to see a Trump impeachment problem. I think he gets over it, but the threat of global war and, let's see. What have we got here? Blah, blah, blah. Known as Nostradamus. Anyway, it's talking about things there, which I think relate more to the threat of war. And it doesn't take Blind Freddy to figure that out at the moment. You don't need Nostradamus to realize that the war between China and the United States is problematic and a clear and present danger. With the release of the coronavirus and with President Trump then saying, you're going to pay for this. We want reparations in dollars, and putting, bans on travel and between the two countries at the moment are very, very strict rules. It is causing a lot of financial damage to China. And Trump is talking about wanting to have trillions of dollars worth of settlement. Of course, we owe them trillions of dollars in the bonds they bought to shore up our national debt. So one way, either way, if they cancel that debt or whatever, it's still going to hurt them and their asset values. So they are being forced, in essence, to look at war with the United States because they cannot pay what they should for the damage that's been done to us and the world, for that matter. In fact, there's one senator that's already, you know, put that bill forward to sue China for the damages in the trillions to the United States economy. Oh, boy, just, and in fact, where is that on my show images page there? Yeah. If you look at that picture of the blazing sun, you know, the orange picture, and on that row in the middle, you'll see a picture of a fuzzy looking, oh, I don't know, what would you call it, a coronavirus, as it looked in 2003 on a movie or a 1 hour show of the Dead Zone, you know, project or whatever. It was just,
yeah,
you know,
I saw that on your page. Okay. Yeah. Wow.
And you can play that little excerpt. It's something like a minute and three quarters long. And it is amazing when you look at that. They talk about how do you mitigate it, and they call about chloroquine as a possible cure for it. It causes respiratory distress and high fever. I mean, this is 2003 in a TV program. How did they do that? You can click on the text below and get to the actual video. And, you know, how did they know? How did they know about this COVID virus and approximately what it would look like? The conspiracy alarms in my mind go ding, 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 maybe bong, 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 big. Something is wrong with that. How did they know? How did the scriptwriters know to write that and put it in there 17 years ago?
Yeah, those questions definitely need to be answered. I got to tell you, Stan, this whole thing smells like a rotten fish. You know, it really does. And even more so the response to it. And yeah, but when I saw that, I thought I'd missed that before your page. So, very interesting indeed. 17 years ago.
Top row of the show images page underneath the EMP shield sign is an article, shows a man's picture there. And to the right of that, there's another picture of the end of the world scenario. Look at the man's picture. It's an article where he says vitamin D, he's done the studies, vitamin D appears to play a role in the COVID-19 mortality rates. Patients with severe deficiencies of vitamin D are twice as likely to experience severe complications, including death. And you can read the whole article there. But if you go down, I put a link down there, underneath the squash and tomato plant images, you'll see three pictures of these vitamins that Holly and I take. And a family member of ours is a doctor. And he called and said to me, take these things, they're sublingual or under the tongue type vitamins. You need D3 and folate, you know, folic acid, and to boost your D3 and iron levels to avoid being, you know, killed by the virus. It improves your immune system, which of course at our age is starting to get a little bit shaky. And also he said for pains at the same time and some more folic acid, take B6, B12 and folic acid in a under the tongue pill, which is the first image there. I put the links there. I think, maybe I have, I haven't yet. No, I'll do that later tonight. Where I got these on Amazon. And I suppose once you see that link, then get it quick because it won't be there long, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, go ahead.
How are we doing for time?
We got about a minute and 20 seconds left.
Okay. At the top row underneath that shield sign, there is that picture of end of the world, what the Bible said must happen before the second coming of Jesus Christ. That's an interesting article. I would look at that. And in relating to EMP shields, the image to the right of that shows the executive order on securing the United States bulk power systems. Now, this is an executive order that the president released, and there's another report that was released by Homeland Security, which specifically mentions EMP shield and its value to protecting the homes and other infrastructure. The White House is way behind this, you know, like behind it bigly, as Trump would say, President Trump would say. And that article just, you know, cements that point. Read it and see what he said and why he said it. He's no bones about it. Wow. And if you were wondering whether we're going to have a war or not, I mean, it's coming.
It's coming. Stan, I want to thank you. What a great session. We're out of time. May God bless you and Holly, and thank you so very much. Wow, it was great. We're going to have to replay that again.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Folks, we're out of time. Have a great night, everyone. On behalf of Eric the Tech, my wife, my daughter, my daughter-in-law, my grandson, Theo, and Lady the Studio Dog, and me, may God bless and stay safe. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for your belief and trust in us. And oh, by the way, HagmanStore.com, HagmanStore.com for coffee. Don't forget, HagmanStore.com. Have a good night. Good night, everyone.